Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Part two of my interview with Tom Lampman from Camar, Alberta. We're going to talk about his favorite thing to do in the garden and just lots of, and his favorite tool. And you're going to not want to miss this. He talks a lot about global warming and climate change at the end. I did kind of put the record back on at the end of the interview. So if you're kind of confused, that's just because I jumped right back into it. So enjoy the show. Thanks. What's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, this might sound kind of strange, but I like putting a lawn chair out in the garden and sitting there and just watching what goes on, watching what the birds do, watching what the insects do. Like this fall, it was just great. I was out there and I was heard this sound, and like, it was the geese flying south. But what the geese were doing, they were catching the thermal updrafts, and you watch them spiral up. Like, they'll be flying south, and then all of a sudden they'll stop and go into circles. And what they're doing is they're catching the updrafts, and they keep rising and rising and rising, and they're really not even flapping their wings. They're just catching the heat as it comes off the ground straight up. And they get way up there. They're just little specks in the sky, and then all of a sudden they start flying south again. And just amazing to watch. It entertains the heck out of me. But then when you start and think about it, what they're doing is they're getting altitude so they can fly basically downhill, which makes sense. You've got all that free energy getting them up in the air, and it saves them a lot of work. Like I said, they're hardly even flapping their wings when they're flying south, especially if they have a tailwind. So those are the kind of things you see when you're in the garden. You can watch, I've seen a couple of times where a pocket gopher will come out of the ground late in the evening, and then you know where to go put the traps and that kind of stuff. And of course, deer will come through there if you're not making a lot of noise. So you learn a lot about your garden just by observing things. And that's the most important thing. Keep your eyes open and just watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I saw a big eagle today too. It was really cool to watch go overhead. Yeah, definitely. Seeing the animals and the wildlife is a big part of it. And I love watching the butterflies. And the bees have been really cool. We had tons of bees this year because of all my sunflowers and just flowers that might get planted. And having more of everything this year just seemed like we had way more bees than I've ever seen before. And like, not our bees that we, like, ordered. We had those too, but just regular bumblebees and, like, all sorts of different kinds of bees.
Yeah, that connection with nature is so important, and you really don't get that unless you stop and appreciate it. And take some time to look at it. Otherwise, it just becomes, you know, one more thing that passes by that you don't really get a chance to notice.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do you want to tell us about the best crop you ever grew?
Best crop? Mm-hmm. I would have to say the most recent crop this year was corn. Like I said, this far north, normally corn is not the first thing you think about in northern Alberta, but we had a bumper crop of corn, and again, timing was perfect. Rains came at the right time, the heat was there when it needed to be, and I've got the freezer half filled with corn.
So, wow, that's a lot of corn.
And cucumbers, that was the other thing, but I think everybody did well on cucumbers this year.
Mm-hmm. We had a lot of cucumbers this year too, but Mike planted a lot of cucumbers. Our corn, I don't know what happened with our corn. I think he's kind of saving it for seed, I think is what he decided to do, so we could grow more next year.
Well, make sure that if he's planting that seed, that he, make sure you have two different varieties and mm-hmm. intercrop them so that they cross-pollinate.
Okay.
That's the only advice I can give you. You won't get a true sweet corn. You'll get some interesting combinations, no question about it. But as long as you've got two different varieties, it usually some of it will come back to true form. You know, if you plant hybrid stuff too often, it'll actually go down in quality. It's that first F1 generation is the best. And there are people smarter than me that know about that, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, you guys are both definitely smarter than I am. So we ordered some cool seeds this year from this guy, Bill McDorman, who had got some seeds from, like, over in Siberia, Mm-hmm. And then he brought them to the Rocky Mountains, so they're kind of like for a colder climate. So those are the seeds he planted.
What were they?
I don't know. I'd have to look on the packet. I can't remember.
We've had a couple of our friends who grew watermelons this year, the little round ones.
Uh-huh.
And this year they actually had a bunch of them come through. Normally you can't grow watermelons up here, but they managed and they had a pretty good crop actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we ordered the corn, we also got watermelons and cantaloupes. And the cantaloupes, I ate them, and they were really good. I mean, they're tiny. They're like the size of a baseball instead of the size of a, you know, what you'd see in the store. But they were really good. And then we saved those seeds, so we're thinking that, you know, next year we'll do better with those. The watermelons didn't really get ripe, I think. I think most of them are still sitting on the counter. We're hoping they're going to ripen, you know, inside.
You'll never know unless you try, right?
Yeah. Well, we cut one open and it wasn't ripe. So then we thought we'd let the other one sit a little longer and see if they get riper. Because, you know, like all my peppers and things are turning red that we harvested green a couple of. Because our last frost where we could have everything out was, gosh, it's probably been a month ago now. But we picked everything. So I still have like some peppers sitting on the porch and we picked those watermelons and cantaloupes. And so I ate most of the cantaloupes. There's still a couple that are sitting on the counter we're hoping are going to ripen a little, because they're not quite like, they didn't change color as much as the two that I ate, so we'll see if they change a little more color. Yeah, but we've never been able to grow anything like that here, so I tried those seeds and it worked good.
Well, what you're saying, Jackie, is you're talking about the research that you've been doing. Those are the results, and I think that's what, you know, gardening is all about, is basically you've got a little research farm right there. And we all do it, and that's what most farmers do. They're always comparing last year's crop to this year's crop. That's what agriculture is about, is trying to get the best and taking full advantage of what Mother Nature can provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've probably learned more than anybody from this podcast this year. So, and it made me more interested in what's going on in the garden. So, yeah, it's working. And my listener, you know, I've gotten quite a bit of feedback about what people are listening. And you're a listener, so.
Yeah.
We're doing good. All right, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received, Tom?
Oh, boy. I guess take what you do seriously, but never take yourself too seriously. You know, really concentrate on the things that you enjoy doing and try to be proficient in them. Don't expect the world and don't try to go for maximum yield. That is one of the things that just bothers the heck out of me, is that in this society, we're always going for maximum yield rather than optimum yield.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it creates nothing but problems. When you start breeding for that, dairy cattle is a perfect example. For years, they always bred for production. When you breed for one particular trait, then what's going to happen is you're going to get other things that you don't want that'll show up. Dairy cows, they can give 20 liters a day of milk. That's a lot of milk to come out of a cow. But if you don't feed them properly, then you get fatty livers, you get hoof problems. And I guess that's one of the things that I really dislike about this, the GMOs, is whenever you're changing a life form to express one particular trait, you're going to run into trouble because you're not really planning for the other traits that normally come with that set of genes. So if you want to crop like a GMO canola, you know, Roundup Ready canola, well, that's wonderful if you spray Roundup. But what else are you doing to the genome? You know, you might be breeding some other really nasty trait that is in there. Just about every living thing that has been bred for one particular trait to be expressed will have other problems. It'll come back and bite them. So I guess that's the best advice. Just really try to optimize what you're doing in the garden rather than forcing maximizing stuff. I've had dairy farmers that used to win awards for production, but they've all geared back now to an optimum production. They've had less problems. And I think it's the same thing with crops. If you go for maximum, yeah, you might get maximum. And if you're selling a product, then you want maximum. But if you want quality, that's not necessarily going to do you well to go for, you know, single gene expression. That's just my personal opinion.
I think that's awesome. I think that's perfect. I think people are really going to enjoy this episode, Tom. You have so much knowledge to share, and you're really good at explaining it to everybody.
Well,
I like that.
I wish I was better explaining some of these things to my wife, but what can you do?
Yeah, but my husband thinks the same way. Tell us about the fair. I know you've entered a fair. Tell us about the fair.
Oh, the fair is fun. The unfortunate part about it was we just don't have enough people coming to compete. In the old days when everybody lived in a quarter section, we had lots of farmers, and they all would come in the fall and bring their produce in and compare it to people who'd make breads and stuff like that. We still have that, but we don't have the numbers that we used to have. And so I walked away with a whole bunch of red ribbons, but, you know, when you only have two or three competitors in a class, you know, it's like a mutual admiration society. It's nice to get the ribbon, but
I have a problem with the fair. The thing I don't like necessarily is, like, you have to bring the food there Thursday night, and
yep,
then it's there all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and by the time you pick it up Sunday night, you're bringing your best stuff, you know, and then it's been there sitting out for so long, you know, what you take to the fair kind of is, it's not your best stuff anymore by the time you get back. Like, I kind of wish it was shorter for us, but
oh yeah, we've done pretty good. Our stuff, we have to get it there basically on Friday night by 5, and then it's there on Saturday.
Yeah,
and we judging at night, and then it's there displayed on Saturday, and it's gone after that, because you want to try to get people interested in this and try to make it a learning experience for mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, we encourage people to sample the stuff. A lot of people go by and look at, but it's like some of the breads and stuff are really, really interesting things, and some of the jams and jellies get some really interesting stuff, and that only helps to kind of help people experiment and try new things. Mm-hmm. But again, if you have people that aren't inclined to enter stuff into a fair, that's not going to happen. In the old days of bragging rights, and you wanted to make sure that you outdid your neighbor. There aren't that many neighbors doing it anymore, so it does make it a bit tough. People enjoy it. They love coming to the fair and looking at the stuff. But the handicrafts and the photography sections were really, they were well entered this year. But, you know, as far as the agriculture produce, it wasn't as big as it could have been, but it still was fun. Everybody had a good time.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I never thought about it. I don't even think I've probably been to a fair until I married Mike and we went and took his stuff in. So, and this is the first year I ever entered anything, and I won the tallest sunflower. I mean, there were only two of us, but still, I still won. So, and I just like to think, well, nobody else brought one because they knew, you know, theirs probably wasn't anywhere near close enough to enter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did not win. The other lady won the one that like was biggest in diameter that had the biggest head. Mine just happened to be tall. So, and that was like a joke enough, just trying to figure out how Mike's like, how are you going to put this thing in the car? You know? And so I'm holding it and it's sticking way out the end of the car. And how do you transport a giant sunflower without the stem breaking was a funny experience in itself. So,
yeah, I think that's fun. Having the biggest squash or the biggest cucumber or something, that's great. But, the one red ribbon that I got this year was my purple onions. They were just beautiful, just uniform. They mm-hmm. tasted really good. You know, that's what we're really doing in agriculture. We're trying to put our best foot forward and trying to produce the healthiest, best tasting stuff we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And where else are you going to do it? You certainly don't do it for the money. Okay. That's for sure. Once I paid my entry fees, I think I broke even at least on that, maybe made a few extra dollars, but you don't do it for money. You do it for the love of what you're doing. And
you have to pay an entry fee?
Oh, yeah, we do. We got to cover the cost of, you know, the tags and putting up the tables and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember paying an entry fee. I remember complaining that we had to pay to park.
Yeah, we're far enough.
Like, we're only going to be here for a minute. Do we really have to pay to park?
Yeah, we don't have parking meters where we live, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. No, well, you just had to pay to park park on the fairground property, like, you know, out on the lawn where everybody parks. But maybe that's where that money goes, to pay for the tags. I never thought of that.
Oh, there's costs, and then we've got a couple of people that, you know, they spend their free time to do this, and organizing it, getting the tags, entry fee, getting the registrations done and all that kind of stuff. Somebody's got to do that. And they certainly don't do it for the money. Let's cover the cost of what goes on there. That's what it's really based for. I think you got to rent the hall and things like that. So we should all kick in a little bit, I think.
Ours must come out of our taxes. Like, we have a huge fairgrounds. We have a fair secretary who has a part-time job all year long. And I don't know where the money comes from. I think she comes out of our property taxes, probably.
You're probably right. We try to make sure that there are government funds and there are some money that comes from the government. But again, we want to make sure that the people involved, if you're not paying an entry fee, then what do you got to lose, really, you know? I made more money entering in the fair than I did on the lotteries, that's for sure.
All right. That's a good one. All right. How about a favorite tool you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what would that be?
Oh, boy. My favorite tool. There are a lot of favorites for different things. I guess the one that I'd really depend on, I think, would be the stirrup hoe when I'm out there weeding. That really works nice. You know what I mean by a stirrup hoe, right?
Mm-mm.
Looks like a stirrup on a saddle. Some people call it a Dutch hoe. And that really is nice because it slices the roots right at the surface there. You don't disturb a lot of soil. And you can just rake all those weeds up, and it really is slick. You can get a lot of weeding done pretty doggone fast using that. And I guess the other thing that goes with that, it would be a pruning shears, because, you know, if you've got to optimize your production, you want to make sure that stuff doesn't grow crazy. If you prune it back a little bit, you get better filling of the fruits. In this fall, I prune some of the raspberries back, and then the next year they come back gangbusters. And apple trees I prune, I'm really surprised how often I use a pruning shears. It's quite nice to have, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you ever have to, like, sharpen your hoe?
Yep.
And how do you do that?
You got an old file, metal file, and just put it in the, grips there, and away we go.
Okay. Because this one lady, Joyce Pinson from Kentucky, was talking about hers and how it was so, it was almost like sweeping the weeds away. And the way you describe that, I don't know, I was just like, he must have a really sharp one, and I wondered if you somehow sharpened it or something.
Well, there's two things to remember. Get it nice and sharp, and don't weed when it's wet. You know, always
wait.
That's
a good tip.
Oh, yeah. Always wait until it dries out a little bit. So if you get that top half inch that's a little bit on the crumbly side, that's just the perfect time to do the weeding. Because if you get it too wet and it sticks to the sharpened edge, you're just pushing mud around is what happens then.
Oh, all right. And that probably happens to people, especially like right after you water, or if it's been raining and your weeds are growing extra tall. That's an important thing to know.
Yeah, and the other thing too is you don't want to be spreading too much around, because if you got any problem with wilt or any types of mold on your crops, the more weeding you do when it's wet, you're just going to spread that. Beans and tomatoes and stuff like that, why ask for trouble?
Do you have any tips for what to do with mold? Because this year has been like a big powdery mildew year, I've been hearing from everybody.
I don't worry too much about that, because I haven't really seen huge amounts of damage. Some places can be worse than others. But again, I go back to soil health. If the soil is working properly and you're not disturbing the roots too much, and you're keeping compost on top of there, you're even if it dries out, when you have a layer of compost on there, it holds the moisture in. And if you get a lot of moisture, if you've got some organic matter on top of the soil like that, that'll soak up quite a bit of that moisture as well. So that's why I've gone to compost, spreading it on top. I don't dig it in, I keep it on top, because it mediates both those effects. It keeps the soil cool when it's hot, it keeps it warm when it's cold, and it absorbs moisture. And then, of course, when it does rain, any nutrients that are in that compost trickle down into your soils.
Excellent. Okay. How about tips for eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? My biggest trouble spot.
Well, you were talking earlier about planning your garden. That's probably the best thing. If you can plan stuff to come in, not all at once, then the kitchen is a lot easier place to live in, because when you got all burners going, canning beans and, you know, making jam and blanching beans for the freezer or what have you, that's the busiest time. And you try to, like cucumbers, you can plant three different plantings of cucumbers, and if you're going to make pickles, you're going to have a week between each one of those where you can do the work. So again, it comes back to planning. If you're that disciplined, it'll save a lot of work in the kitchen.
Do you get three different plantings of cucumbers up there?
Yes, I do. And that's only because I'm kind of like your husband, Mike. I plant too many of them. So I've learned, okay, if I'm going to plant them, I better put this row in here, and I better put that row in over there. One area of the garden this year, I put beans next to cucumbers, and my wife gave me heck because she could barely get in to pick the beans because there were so many cucumbers all over. So again, it's using your head, looking forward a little bit, and thinking your garden through a little bit better. That always helps. It just makes life a little easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We learned a lot this year because we had that new, like, kind of mini farm thing. So, how about secrets for preserving food or making it last?
Oh boy, I'll say this: I do have a freezer, and this freezer is 42 years old. We got it before my oldest boy was born. We've always kept it outside in a shed. And it is still going after 42 years. So if you're going to use a freezer, get a good one if you can afford it, and store it someplace where it's not going to work too hard. For 2 months of the year, my freezer doesn't even come on, because at minus 30, you don't really worry about it too much, do you? So, and you try to keep it out of direct sun, because then it has to work twice as hard. So you can do that. That's one thing if you're freezing food. As far as canning, experiment a little bit with recipes, because depending on what you use, levels of salt, and some people make bread and butter pickles, and come up with a list of different recipes and always try something new every year. You'll get to a point where you'll really like one, and you'll be doing that. That'll be one of the family favorites. That's the only tip I can give, I guess.
Those are both awesome tips. I love the part about keep your freezer. Like, how many people think about, where am I going to put my freezer? They just, like, you know, plug it in and think it's going to stay. But that's a good point. If you put it someplace cool, it's not going to have to work as hard in the summer. And if you, you know, when it's cold, yeah, it doesn't have to do as much either.
And of course,
did I say that right?
Yeah, I guess the point I'm trying to make there is that, sure, 42 years ago, I'm sure they used a lot better quality stuff, okay? And nowadays, with the way people are making stuff, it wears out a little bit quicker, I think. But you don't want to make an appliance work any harder than it has to. Just like in the garden, I don't want to have to work any harder than I have to. So I tend to weed early in the morning after it's kind of dried out, if there's a nice breeze. Work when it's convenient for you, and work when it's not hot. You don't weed when there's tons of mosquitoes. You know, kind of use your head. Go with the flow.
I totally agree. I think gardening needs to be convenient and easy. That's one of the reasons I really like raised beds, because you can sit on the edge of the bed. And to me, that makes a huge difference. If I'm bending over and feeling awkward and constantly having to, like, move into strange positions, I'm not going to want to be out there as long. But if I can just sit on the edge of the bed, I can sit there all morning for hours and drink my coffee and just, you know, either pull the weeds or harvest or whatever it is. But if I'm bending over in weird places to pick those green beans, I'm not going to want to do it as much. And then I like to have things, like, right outside my kitchen door instead of... Our mini farm is, like, twice as far as our garden, I thought, was far away. You know, but I made it out there this year anyway, more than I usually do.
ask people why they don't have a garden, and I bet you 95% of the time they'll say it's too much work.
Yeah.
And that always just flabbergasted me. I said, how can it be too much work? You're outside, you're in the fresh air, you got your hands in the soil. How much work is there? A little bit of weeding now and then, and you get to eat all this free food? I don't know. I have a rough time buying that.
Oh, I don't know. Mike does a lot of work. If I had to do it all on my own, I think it'd be a lot harder.
True.
But once you get the basics down, once you get those beds built, then the next year, you know, if you just do like a little project each year, I think that's been the biggest thing, is just like, because we've had such a slow, gradual growth of our garden. You know, we've been married 23 years this year. So, you know, we started out with just two little, I don't know, 4x10 beds. And yep. Now it's just expanded a little bit over the years. So every year, so you're excited about that new bed that you built, which that's one of my favorite jobs, is building a new bed. I love finding a new place to grow and digging the soil out. It's like cleaning the chalkboard to me. I don't know. I just like cutting that sod up and making a new place to grow things. But yeah, if you overwhelm yourself in the beginning, I think that's what people are talking about. How about, do you have any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods? Or any weird or unusual techniques for cooking ordinary foods?
Oh, when the grandkids come out, what we like to do is we build a fire, and then we take potatoes and cut them lengthwise, put butter in there and stuff, and we wrap them up in tin foil, and we bury them in the hot coals. And then we come back in about an hour's time. Boy, are those good. That's fun. And then the kids get involved with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to cook things.
Yeah, cooking hot dogs on a stick. That's a fun thing to do with kids.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, you can even just like wrap up like other vegetables, like peppers and I don't know what else you can put in there, tomatoes and just different things in like a piece of tin foil, zucchini or squash or something, and do the same thing by a fire out on the coals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kids love that. How about, do you have a favorite recipe you like to cook, or you like your wife to cook from the garden?
I would think probably strawberry rhubarb jam. I love that stuff.
Ooh.
And toasted rye bread. Is that ever good? Ooh.
That sounds good. How about a favorite internet resource? Got something to share with listeners? Is there some place you like to go on the internet? You probably have done so much, you could be writing your own internet resource.
I'll just say the internet. There's tons of stuff out there, really, really good stuff out there. I think the ones that I think of the most often that I go to, and it's, I guess, understandable, is Dr. Elaine Ingram has got the Soil Web, and she has a number of pretty good videos about soil. And she's very, very understandable. She got a PhD and got all the letters behind her name. She really will get your mind open up on about how soil works and how important it is. The other one, too, occasionally, I don't know if you know this Back to Eden video that was out, Paul Gotchi, he's out of Washington State, a Christian fellow, and he uses wood chip gardening. Very, very good information that you can get from him. He has a different perspective on it, but he puts wood chips and gardens in wood, not in wood chips, but puts wood chips on top of the soil and gardens in the soil below. And those wood chips, they, as they decompose, they really improve his soil. That's fun. And again, I guess just the internet. There's so much out there. Browsing, you know, take 15 minutes a day and just kind of browse agricultural or gardening things, and you'll learn tons. There's lots of out there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do.
And I haven't heard anybody, I don't think, the Dr. Ingram doesn't sound familiar. Soil Web doesn't sound familiar to me. So that sounds good. We'll have to check that out. Back to Eden, I'm pretty sure I've seen that. Yep. A favorite reading material, or a book or a magazine or blog or anything like that?
Oh, boy. Unfortunately, I tend to read technical journals, just the way I am, I guess. If I can get my hand on some particular item, whether it be plumbing, whether it be physics. I'm just kind of a nerd when it comes to stuff like that. So,
oh, okay.
You know, it to me, to get in the car and drive all the way to the library to pick up a book when the internet's right here, it's getting to the point where, yeah, I like to read, but it's so much easier and convenient to be on the internet when you got a source like that.
Mm-hmm. And then Amazon will deliver it right off the internet, too, if you really got to have it.
That's right.
All right, are you ready for my final question?
Sure, whatever it could be.
Okay. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, Tom, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or globally?
Oh, boy. I guess the biggest one that I see is getting carbon back into the soil. Most of the carbon on this planet is locked up in the soil, whether it be oil, whether it be coal. Most of it's locked up in the top 3 feet of the soil. And what we've done is we've liberated so much of that carbon in the form of CO2 by burning fossil fuels that we need to really do something. And the biggest thing you can do is plant a tree. There's an old expression, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is what, that says it all. We need to put more living green things on this planet. We don't need to keep removing them. We don't need to put more parking lots up, more tall buildings, more subdevelopments, more highways. We don't need that. We need to put more green stuff on this planet to get it back to where it can be healthy again.
Isn't the saying, when's the best time to plant a tree 20 years ago? When's the second best time today?
Hey, right.
Is there two parts to that?
I think you're right. I think it works that way.
The next best time is today. Yeah, I totally agree. Especially, I was just talking to this weekend to some kids down in Kalispell, because in the Flathead Valley where we live, the Flathead Valley is just some of the best farmland. And then out against the mountains, you know, is where it would be better if they were building there instead of just constantly tearing up all the farmland and putting yet another, you know, like you said, shopping center or parking lot. Or, you know, why don't we build our parking lots up if we have to have more parking lots? Plus then they'd be shaded, which would, you know, to me, I think, like I always say, if I was president, one of the first things I would do is require a tree for every 4 to 6 cars in a parking lot. Like, I just think, you know, they would provide shade in the summer so people wouldn't be so hot when they go out to their car, which would reduce, you know, energy air conditioners when people drive. And, you know, and then we'd have the trees growing to kind of come offset some of the, you know, car problems. And just, I don't know. I'm never going to be president. I don't want to be president, but.
Well, I'll say this.
If I was a lawmaker.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What I would say, Jackie, is that every time you go to a funeral, plant a tree for that person.
Well, that's a good one.
Yep.
Okay. How about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Well, I guess I'll have to use the corporate logo. Just get out there and do it. Get your fingers in the soil. It's an experience. It's fun. Do it. It's just, if you don't do it, if you never try it, you'll never know what you missed. I guess it's the same thing for skydiving too. But skydiving, you know, if at first you don't succeed, skydiving probably isn't for you. Eh? So.
Okay, that's a great way to leave it off. And you know what? We decided this weekend in Montana, our motto is, get her done.
Yeah. You'll never know unless you try it. If you don't like it, okay, you're just that much smarter. Gardening's not your cup of tea. Well, maybe it's somebody else's cup of tea, but get out there and try it at least once. Gosh.
And I think that you have really shared some awesome tips and secrets and knowledge about how to be successful and how to embrace your failures if you do fail, and that if you just try, lots of stuff is going to grow and one or two things might not work, but overall you're probably going to be more successful than you think if you just give it a try.
Yeah, and the neat part too, Jackie, is with all that super duper software you got there, you can edit all the stupid stuff I said and keep all the good stuff.
I don't think I have to do much editing. We are kind of a little long. We're at an hour and a half, so I might cut a thing out here or there.
Chop it down to what works for you.
No, her. I think you really shared a lot of great things today, and I really appreciate it. And I especially appreciate you working with my technical challenges. It's been a week for those.
Now that winter's on its way, I'll have more time to listen to the rest of your podcast. How many did you do total? 90?
Well, you're going to be number 90. You have a great day.
Okay, thanks again. The outside of the trees, it may kill them. The old ones get cooked pretty good. They turn pretty black and they fall down and they lay there. And over centuries, that happens every, let's say, 5 years, you have a forest fire. What is that? That's biochar. That's carbon. It's right there in the soil. That's where all of our coal seams have come from. You know, people forget about that over the centuries. We've had forest fires up north here all the time, regular occurrence. That's biochar. That's carbon that's gone back into the soil and stayed there. It's been locked up. It all comes from the air, the CO2. So when we burn more of it, we just put that CO2 back in the air and it keeps raising the carbon dioxide levels. So why do we have global warming? Duh. You know what I mean?
So then do we need to like take the forest fire, that charcoal, and like put it into where the farmland is though? Like that's what the part I'm not really understanding.
That is the problem. If you take a look at where I live, the land around my little acres here,
right,
a good 6 to 8 inches higher than the farmland next to me. Now, really? That is all carbon that's left the soil. That we don't have cover crops anymore. You know, in the old days, you used to have hay crops. And every 4 years, you'd plow down that hay crop and you'd build up the soil. You'd improve the tilth because you're plowing all of the roots, the stems back into the soil. And you're holding that stuff there. The cows go and eat it and they, you know, poop it out the back end of them and it goes back into the soil. We're mining carbon, just like we mine iron ore and everything else. We're mining that carbon and we're releasing it into the air where it doesn't need to be. And the only way you've got to recapture that is by growing green stuff and growing trees. They capture that carbon. You know what? I'm going to send you a little video. Derek, it's about 4 minutes long. It's what is a tree made of?
Mm-hmm.
You've probably seen Derek Mueller on he's got a podcast. It's 4 minutes, and it's probably the most impressive little 4 minutes you'll ever see because it talks specifically about where does the carbon go that's in a tree. I think you'll really get a kick out of it because I showed it to my grandkids, and they never asked the question. So you watch it. I'll send you a bunch of stuff. If I come across something, Jackie, okay, cool. I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
What did you think of the article that I sent you there about Russia?
I haven't had time to read that yet.
Oh, no, it was biggest country in the world.
Wait, no, the thing about Russia, GMO. They're not going to go GMO? Oh, I did read that. Well, what I did was I went and researched to see if that was true and if it had, and then I saw all sorts of things all over the internet about that.
Yep.
That they...
There's a lot of countries that are banning GMOs, but we don't hear about that in North America because the industry here is so Monsanto-oriented.
Oh, yeah, this is what I was going to say. So that conference I went to, that was one of the big things. This woman, Liz Carlisle, wrote this book called The Lentil Underground, and that's what it's about. They call them renegade farmers here in Montana that are planting those cover crops. And the biggest problem is we know we need to plant those cover crops. And why don't farmers do that if they know this answer? And so this woman wrote this book and talked about, you know, what are some of the hang-up, what are the barriers to preventing farmers? And a lot of it was like worry about, you know, well, then when am I going to squeeze that in between my cash crop? What are people going to say if I'm leasing this land? Will the guy lease it to me if I want to do something, you know, kind of different than what the neighbors are doing? And also, and then she, I guess, talked to, I don't know, I almost went to the library today to see if the book came in over the weekend while it was closed for Columbus Day. Because I haven't got to read it yet, but I guess, yeah, this amazing woman went and talked to, you know, what they're doing successfully here in Montana to try to put that carbon back in. And they're doing exactly what you just said about growing the green cover crops.
Well, do you know what a nurse crop is?
No. Just so you know, I turned the recording back on.
Oh, okay. a nurse crop is a perfect example. And this used to happen quite a bit, where you would plant a crop of, let's say, wheat or barley, but you would plant a hay crop underneath that. In other words, you would go in and you'd plant a barley crop or wheat crop, whatever it is. And then what you'd do is you'd go scatter hay crop like alfalfa and brome grass and stuff like that on top of it. And the barley, of course, shoots right up right away because it grows fast. And the cover crop is slower to take off because it's being shaded by the barley. And then when they harvest the barley, you've got all these small seedlings, and that is your next year's hay crop. So you've got the cover crop, plus you've got the roots going into the soil. But the problem is here, everybody's cash cropping stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're basically doing what I look at is clear cutting. They cut everything down and harvest it and sell it. It's the same thing as clear cutting a forest. You never get a chance to get that organic matter back into the soil, because the roots and the stems, that's what is in the soil. That's what makes up the soil. And we're mining the soil. I said that earlier. When you mine the soil, you're exporting it. I see guys down here shipping their straw off. Well, gosh, you know, that's coming out of the soil. They're shipping that straw down to some big feedlot down by Lethbridge to, bed down their cows in the stockyards. Is that a smart way of doing it? Why not grow the cows right here and bed them down here, you know? Why do we have to ship it halfway across the country or even down into Montana? You know, it makes no sense to me whatsoever.
So. Well, that's like, don't they want to ship all that tar sands oil to, like, countries overseas? Like, isn't the whole big problem they want that Keystone Pipeline to go to the Gulf of Mexico? They're going to process it, and it's not even for the United States. It's to go overseas to other places.
Well, it comes back down
it's
to the
It's going to go under that reservoir in Nebraska, this huge aquifer of drinking water, and if something happens.
Yep. Like I said, it's all about dollars. You spend that much money building all of those tar sand plants, you got to have a return on your investment. So you'll sell it to anybody that'll pay the money. That's just economics, unfortunately. It has no concern for the environment. But anyway, don't get me started.
Okay, we'll save that for another day. Maybe as a bonus Earth Day episode next spring.
There you go.
Thanks.
I like your thinking.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Send you some stuff and we'll talk later.
Okay, perfect. You have a great day.
Yeah, be good.
Okay, bye. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.